Hello, everyone, and welcome back to HOA. It's a True Story. Our guest today, I'm super excited about this episode. Ted Ma is a motivational keynote speaker that has an incredible background of experiences from everything from books and blogs and podcasts, and of course, speaking to groups all around the country and all around the world. I do feel so honored to have him on our show today, and we're going to be discussing mentorship versus leadership. And this is a pretty hot topic with all of the different association management companies really struggling with getting enough employees in and then how to onboard them properly and get people going the way they need to. So Ted, thank you for joining us and welcome to HOA. It's a True Story.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today is the president from GB Group, Bill Mann.
Thank you, Reagan.
And Kelly Zibel, owner of DC Group Management. Before we get deep into the motivational topic area, let's go a little bit into just how you got into this, how you got into speaking. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I started my speaking business in the beginning of 2019. I spent my previous 16 years of my career building and leading a sales team that we grew to several thousand independent agents with a direct sales company. And so through that experience, I was asked to speak on stage a lot, ended up being a national trainer for that company. What was really unique, aside from my love from speaking on stage and being able to impact people in keynotes, workshops, et cetera, was that that organization in direct sales, everyone was an independent contractor. And so it wasn't just a large team that I was leading, but it was a large team of 1099 folks. So we didn't provide them a salary or benefits. And so no one had to do what you were telling them to. So it really was a masterclass in influence, in leadership. And that led me into starting my speaking business about 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, obviously you were successful at it. So it, you know, created this new avenue for you. But let's talk a little bit about what is the difference between mentorship and leadership.
It's a great question. And it really comes down to a focus. And I say that because many of us are familiar with the differences in thinking and approach between leaders and managers. But it's a similar or parallel type of difference that exists between leaders and mentors, meaning that every mentor is a leader, but not every leader is a mentor. So when we look at some of the differences, leaders will focus on the direction of their team and their organization, whereas mentors will focus on deepening and strengthening the individual relationship.
I really love that quote. That is just, that is so fantastic. Not every leader is a mentor. That's pretty right on.
You know, I was fortunate to hear Ted speak, gosh, almost a year ago, I guess, back in February at an industry conference. He was the keynote speaker, and his conversation around leadership versus mentorship and that exact quote came up during his talk and was just so encapsulating of something that I had felt but never been able to kind of put into words in terms of how I've been able to get to where I've been through my career, or how you guys have been able to get through to where you're in your career, is be the people who mentored us to help us get there. And so I loved his conversation around, we've all worked for great leaders, but the people that mentor us are the ones who help us get far.
As an owner of a company, how do you inspire the mentorship aspect from your leaders?
Well, let me back up, and I do want to address your question, but here's one thing that I've realized, and to piggyback on what Kelly shared, leaders can be forgotten. And many of us throughout our career, we've worked with multiple, sometimes even dozens different leaders that we don't really remember, but mentors never are. And that's why it's so significant. I call it being the one, being the person that makes a significant impact in someone's career professionally or in their personal life when we step into that role. And Regan, to your question, what can an owner or an executive do to create this within the organization? Number one, it starts with being that person to model, because leadership starts at the top. And so when an executive decides this is important for me personally to step into that role, because I believe all of us, no matter where you are in your career, should have mentors, and all of us should be a mentor to somebody else. And so number one is being the example for others and deciding to step into that role yourself. And number two is just making a conscious and intentional decision that this is something that you want to infuse in the culture of your organization. And we did a lot of research, some formal academic research around this to find out the impact of mentorship in the workplace. And to summarize it at a high level, the organizations that attract and retain the best employees and get the best out of people are ones that created a culture of mentorship, not just the CEO mentoring one or two people, but creating a culture within the organization.
Wow, that is so powerful.
So Ted, from the mentorship's perspective, the leader of a company, is it like, so you lead and you mentor a few people, how do you develop the culture with the people below you? Is it something that you consciously go and do and try to set up different mentorships with different people? Or is it something that kind of just grows on its own more organically?
Yes, I think the answer, Bill, meaning that it's definitely a conscious decision. And some organizations develop a formal structured mentoring program where they'll match people up and they'll have a pool of mentors and mentees and they'll have that structure in place. Other organizations don't have the structure, but there's still the intention that's in place, which again, starts at the executive level. It's a conversation with senior management so that people are bought into the idea of creating this culture if there's no formal program in place. What was interesting to me, Bill, and the research revealed to us is that people are more likely to be involved in an informal mentoring relationship than a structured program. So
that's
for those
what I would think too.
You don't
I
have
would
to too. Create a structured program.
I think that organically they're going to do it that way, especially if they like the person that they're going to be mentoring. But it's a little more challenging when they're not necessarily super fond of that individual and they're trying to, you know, get them to rise up. They may give up on it a little bit faster.
Not only that, Regan, but there's got to be, right, this mutual chemistry that I think you're alluding to. And I liken it to dating, right? We've all had the experience where you date somebody and initially things are going really well, and then you come to find out, might not have been the best match. And sometimes mentoring's like that too, right? And so the mentor and mentee both have to be willing and voluntarily entering into the relationship, but there's got to be boundaries around and expectations around what type of interaction is there going to be, what frequency is it going to be. So that way it's not too much on the mentor. And a lot of times I'll talk to folks looking for a mentor and say, well, Ted, I'm waiting for my mentor to give me X. And the reality is the number one trait that our research showed of mentees is taking initiative. So it's on the mentee to drive the relationship, to help schedule the meetings, to create the agenda and to ask for help, not to just sit back and wait for the mentor to become this superhero that swoops in and helps them get to the next level in their career.
Wow, that's a surprising point. I would not have thought that, but I guess it makes a lot of sense. What do you think holds the manager back from jumping in and trying to initiate it?
There's a lot of mental barriers that people in management roles will face that prevent them. One of the biggest ones is fear. And that can come from personal insecurity, feeling like, hey, I want people around me to do well, but I don't want them to do too well. Mm-hmm. And if I'm being honest, in my early 20s, I felt like that. Like, I want my team to succeed, just not to do better than I was doing. So some of that fear came from insecurity. Some of it came from a lack of confidence. People feeling like I'm not equipped to step into the role to be a mentor. And the reality for all of our listeners is that you're perfectly positioned to help the person that you once were. So you don't need a formal training program. You are in this position now and you know enough to start exactly where you are. Another thing that holds a lot of managers back, Regan, is ego. When we feel like, well, I don't need to help other people or mentor other people to be successful. And a lot of times that ego blinds us from the impact we can make because we're so focused, which I have been in my career at times as well, so focused on personal success that we're not thinking about the impact we're making or the significance that we're building by creating this legacy that we leave behind in those that we develop.
It's kind of that mentality that people don't want to hire smarter than them because they're afraid they'll lose their job to that individual. When in fact, you should always be looking to hire somebody smarter than you that can take your place so that you could continue your growth.
What's the dynamic with people working from home, working with mentorships and stuff like that? Because I would think that impact the situation quite a bit.
Bill, before I jump in there, I think Kelly had a comment as well.
Yeah, I mean, just really tying into Bill's comment, right? So we talked about the manager and encouraging, you know, getting over those fears as a manager, but as a mentee, a lot of people work from home, work remote, may not have met their teams, met other people. Like, how do you, as an employee, if you're working from home in this new reality that we're all in, find someone to mentor you and sort of go out and ask someone out to date you as a mentor? Right? Use that analogy. How are we going to, how do we encourage that, especially in this remote culture?
Yeah, excellent questions. And I don't yet know of a platform that's online dating for mentors or mentees. So it will take some intentional outreach. But here's what I can say. And I do, Regan, I want to circle back for a moment to something you said. I was speaking last week in Philadelphia and somebody came up to me off stage and said, are you telling me that I should be okay training my replacement? And I said, absolutely. Because the more you can add value to others, empower others and help them succeed, the more invaluable you become to your organization. So I just want to address that for those that might be feeling like, I don't want to train my replacement. Absolutely. If you want to continue to ascend in your career, I would encourage you to shift your thinking there. But back to Bill and Kelly, your question around remote work. You know, mentorship is built on relationships. And so can you build relationships in a virtual or hybrid environment? Absolutely, you can. And it requires thoughtfulness and it requires outreach. So it also means like if you're somebody that's looking for a mentor at this point in your career to help you get to the next level, what I would encourage you to do is write down a list of 5 to 10 potential candidates that you admire and respect, not just their accomplishments in life, but who they are as a person, their characteristics and personality traits, because you don't want to emulate somebody who's had great financial or career success, but they have a terrible family life or no respect from the people in their inner circle. I would encourage you to look at the whole person and create this list of candidates. And then Bill, as you mentioned, you're going to have to reach out to a bunch of people and see if they're open to engaging in that. And I've had many times in my career where I've reached out and said, hey, I admire and respect what you've accomplished. I would love to create a relationship. Would you be open to mentoring me? And people said no, not because they didn't want to help me or not because they were a mean person, but just they didn't have the capacity to do so. So understanding, Kelly, that we may have to reach out to 3, 4, 5 people to get one yes, and then also being realistic with our ask. Like my current mentor, I don't ask him to meet with me for an hour every week on Zoom. He's an international Hall of Fame speaker and bestselling author. That's not realistic. So what I did is said, hey, could we connect once a quarter for 30 minutes? And so that way it doesn't overwhelm him and his schedule, mentors. You don't have to rearrange your life and be overwhelmed to effectively mentor people. But also I get the value that I need from these targeted 30-minute Zoom conversations once a quarter.
Now, I want to ask a question about this because there's also this dynamic of what if your mentor that you're talking to is a male and you're a female or vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. You now have this gender issue. And it's so litigious out there now that you have to be very careful how you approach these kinds of things. So as the CEO of the company, I did mentor several people, both men and women, and had no problem with it. But I know as a woman, it was harder for me to get a mentor as a male. Do you think that that is something that you have seen? Is it not a problem? Is it the same ask? Or as Kelly said, it's kind of like we're dating again. We don't want to put anybody on blast there.
Regan, that's such a powerful question. And I can only speak from the male perspective and from the research we've done. What we have found is that some people prefer to be mentored by somebody like them, same gender, same religion, same political beliefs, same industry. And that's fine if that's that person's preference, either as a mentor or a mentee to connect with somebody that's like them. I do believe though, and I think all of our listeners can appreciate the importance and the value of diversity of perspective and diversity of thought. And if that's the case, and the person that you're looking to mentor you is not like you in some way, whether it's gender or race, et cetera, I would encourage you to not let that be the barrier for reaching out, but also to be mindful and sensitive about the dynamics. Because if for myself, I'm mixed race, I'm Asian and white. If I'm reaching out to some, my mentor happens to be Black. So I have to understand like that's a great perspective that he can give me because he grew up differently than I did. But I also need to be thoughtful that there are different dynamics because we happen to be of a different race and same thing of a different gender. So to your question, I don't think it's a barrier, but I think it's important for us to be mindful of the differences, both in our initial approach and even in our interactions. Like I've had female mentors in the past too. Would I reach out to them on Saturday at 10 p.m. at night? No, that's not appropriate because this is a professional relationship. So I think if we're thoughtful about it, we can overcome some of those barriers.
Yeah, about it being a professional relationship. I will say I do have a mentor who is a male. And so I am a female and he is a male and he's been a mentor for me for many, many, many years. But again, it's a professional relationship that we have. And I feel like I, as the mentee, have to respect those boundaries in the relationship. So I don't send text messages or reach out outside of work hours or expect any kind of connection outside of work hours. We will run into each other at industry conferences and things like that, but we're always, you know, usually in a group setting, or if we have a one-on-one meeting, it's, you know, in a public space with other people. So it's never in
being it appropriate.
It's always you treat it as a professional relationship. It is a personal relationship between, I think, a mentor and a mentee, to your point, but it is a professional relationship. It is to help you get further in your career or your life, but it needs to be a professional relationship, I think. That's my opinion.
Now, if you have somebody like Bill, who is in charge of a fairly large company, and he wants to develop that mentorship culture within that company, can he just kind of train everybody at once? Is it something you should only do one at a time? What's your position on that?
In terms of your question, Regan, are you referring to everybody in the company creating a mentoring relationship with everybody?
Well, if you wanted your senior management to be more mentoring to the mid-level management.
Sure.
As Bill is president, would it be possible for him to mentor to that senior level group? Can you do more than one person at a time?
Yes. And you can lead a large group, but you can only effectively mentor a few people.
Good point.
A few does not mean one. I have more than one person that I mentor in my past career and in my current career. However, I've also tried to take on foolishly and maybe arrogantly thinking like I can help all these people. And I just didn't have the capacity to do that. So if you're trying to mentor 10 people, I would say that is far too many, but it doesn't have to be just one. It might be two or three. I would strongly encourage every leader listening to not go beyond like four or five, but two or three can be, because as Kelly mentioned, it's a personal relationship, right? So it has a professional dynamic. We need to respect our mentors' time, their background, their boundaries, and we need to set some expectations up front. And it doesn't only have to be one individual that we work with at a time.
So when you are working with somebody, can you tell when that aha moment happens for that individual? Give me an example of what that turning point looks like for somebody.
I would say yes and, because you absolutely can tell. And sometimes you can tell in the moment itself because the light bulb goes on and you see in somebody or you hear some immediate feedback, which is super cool because you know right away. A lot of times though, you won't find out until later. And I call these mentorship moments, right? So these micro moments of influence, of impact. And a mentorship moment, as I define it, it's an experience with a trusted advisor that helps to shift your thinking or your behavior. So many of us can look back at points in our career and we have these pivotal moments where like, I was never the same after that. Or I learned by watching this person and how they handled the situation, how they dealt with this problem, how they interacted with somebody. And it was a light bulb moment, or maybe it was a one-on-one conversation. But you can see sometimes in the moment and because you get that feedback, but sometimes you'll actually see them later on. So let me tell you a quick story to give you an example of that. Early in my career, I was doing extremely well, building a sales team. We're going really fast. And then people started leaving. And my top producer ended up leaving and I found out about it. And so I approached her and I said, hey, Sabrina, what's going on? Why is everyone quitting? And she said, well, I can tell you, but you probably don't want to hear the real answer. And I said, yeah, I'm sure it's probably about the money, right? You want to have a higher level of commission that you're earning. And she said, no, it's not about the money, Ted. The reason people are leaving is because of you. And that hit me, as you all can imagine, like a ton of bricks, because it forced me to look in the mirror at myself in the way I never had, because I thought very highly of myself, as many of us do as leaders. And it caused me to not only pause, but to say, you know what? I need to connect with my mentor to find out what I'm doing wrong. And so I approached him and asked for his advice. And I never forget the conversation. He said, Ted, I believe in you. And I have no doubt you can become one of the top leaders in this organization. But if you want people to stick around and you want your team members to perform up to their level of potential, you're going to have to change the way that you show up for people and your leadership and communication style. And he said, what's holding you back is the same issue that most leaders struggle with. You're so focused on the results and the bottom line, which I was, and I was kind of proud of. But he said, you're so focused on results that you've been neglecting the relationships. And when I took a step back, I realized, Regan, he was spot on. I had been so entrenched in increasing the bottom line and driving sales that I neglected connecting with people on a personal level. And that conversation for me was a mentorship moment that completely changed my approach. I shifted the way I thought about my interactions in my team. And long story short, after that conversation, I worked really, really hard to make people feel valued, appreciated, heard, and seen. And as a result, by the time I was in my 30s, I was the youngest person in the top 1% in the company.
Wow. I do know what you mean. You often don't realize that one comment that you make to somebody can really impact them. And it often doesn't come around till a year or two, three later. And they tell you, you know, you really helped me that one thing you said. And you're thinking, oh my God, that wasn't even like a profound moment. That was just a flippant response.
I bet you there's times that you or Bill or Kelly have said things to people and you're just, you know, having a conversation naturally, answering a question, sharing some advice. And as you mentioned, Regan, these people will come back months, sometimes years later, and like, I still remember that conversation. When you said blank, it just, I will never forget it. And I'm so thankful. And we're like, there's been times people have said that to me, and I'm honestly, I don't even remember saying what they share, but I'm glad it was valuable to them. And that's why I think we should give freely of our advice, our experience, be transparent in sharing our mistakes and failures, because let's face it, people will learn more from mistakes and failures than they will from our successes. So when we can be open and transparent with people and have these conversations, we can create these mentorship moments that they will come back in the future and let us know what the impact was.
Bringing up a point about the mentor-mentee relationship, it's also something of a friendship, but it's not. Right? You have to kind of still keep that barrier there. Have you encountered that? I think probably Kelly, you were describing it the best. I mean, you can be friendly because you're getting mentored, but you don't create a personal friendship.
Yeah. I mean, I think Ted talked about, you know, talking about intentions and being intentional about the relationship. So, and intentional about what you ask for. So for him and his mentor, it's 30 minutes every quarter. That's all I'm going to ask of your time. Understanding that largely these mentee-mentor relationships, it's unpaid extra things you do on top of the things you get paid to do. And some of the mentors I've had in my career, and I don't know about any of you all, but they have been not my direct boss in some cases. And it's been, but someone who has either works for the same company or works in the same industry or just someone in general that I know that has then mentored me and but is taking time out of their own life to participate in this relationship. So making sure that you set boundaries around that and everybody's clear on what that is.
Bill, having been in some really large companies and then also some really smaller companies, have you ever looked around at your employees and said, I know that person would be a really good leader and I want to mentor them?
Do it all the time.
So what is it that
whatever a skill set or something they need help with or something to get them to the next level, you know, especially if they're open to it, because it is a relationship. If they're open to it, sometimes they're not open to it. Sometimes the mentee has an ego that thinks they know everything and doesn't.
Oh yeah.
So absolutely. It's a two-way street on that side. But yes, there are people who are very open to help. And usually that relationship just kind of organically grows is the way that it has for me.
So Ted, I heard you talk one time about being an elder millennial, as I am as well. And we got a lot of raps for, you know, bad comments from our older brethren that had to, who were responsible for mentoring us. And now we're having to mentor these digital natives, Gen Z, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, we're sort of poking fun at them. How do you kind of deal with that now that we're the group that's doing the mentoring? How do you talk about those generational kind of issues when people are responsible for mentoring a younger generation that maybe thinks about things differently than they do?
Good point.
Excellent question, Kelly. My philosophy is this: meet people where they're at, not where you're at. And I've made so many mistakes in relationships with people in different generations and myself where I didn't do that. So whether I'm talking to somebody who's a baby boomer or someone who's Gen Z, the more I can do my best to empathize and understand not only what they're going through, but maybe their outlook on life, their preferred method of communication, for example, my mentor is older than I am, which by the way is a misperception. Sometimes people feel like, well, you can only, the mentor's always got to be the senior mentoring the junior, but there's peer mentorship groups or masterminds we can be a part of. There's situational mentors we only come to in specific instances or circumstances. There's reverse mentoring where the junior person mentors the senior person, maybe about technology or social media, mm-hmm. et cetera. But back to the point that because my mentor is older than I am, I have to find out his preferred method of communication. And so that I can meet him where he's at as a mentor. And it's the same thing for my mentees, right? It's this duality and kind of a two-way street of the relationship that we want to be mindful of some of these differences. And it ties back to Regan's question about male versus female. Like if you are 20 to 30 years in age difference between your mentor or mentee, being aware of that and being mindful of that can help you with your approach and the type of conversations that you have.
Sometimes when I'm interviewing a person, I would ask them about their hobbies and things they like to do on off hours, simply to get a better understanding of them as an individual. And you never know when something's going to come up in the company that you're going to need that kind of expertise. This one person told me they were a gamer. Okay, well, there's not a lot of need for gaming in my industry, but later there actually was a situation that came up and I did need their expertise. So I asked them if they would be willing to teach all of us and mentor us and do similar of a masterclass to get us all up to speed. And they were really excited that something they're very passionate about, they got to teach and mentor a few of us on. So I do like that you're pointing out it's not an age thing, but a experience thing.
Regan, can I piggyback on that?
Sure.
You mentioned earlier about the dynamics of professional versus personal relationship and how some mentors may not want to connect that much personally. What I found, and I'll quote the great Dr. John C. Maxwell, he said, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So what I can say is, as much as I've always respected my mentor's boundaries, and I expect that my mentees expect the boundaries that I set and the expectations that we have in the relationship, I do believe in connecting on a personal level, whether it's something like you alluded to, finding out somebody's passions and hobbies, mm-hmm. Finding out what's going on in their family life, because mentoring isn't just, I want to help you advance in your professional goals. It's the mindset and the philosophy is, I want to help you develop as a person. I want to help you grow in not just, you know, the letters behind your name or the title at your job, but I want you to become a better you. And I think that all of us as mentors should take that perspective on, yes, we want to help people succeed professionally. And yes, it may be a professional relationship. And I mentioned this because I spoke at a conference recently and someone asked me after, like, is it okay to be friends with some of your mentoring? Because I see myself as a mentor, but I don't really want to build the friendship side. And my response was, absolutely. Not only is it okay, personally, I would recommend it, because when you create that connection, that relationship, it goes so much deeper than just the superficial level of having professional question and answer sessions.
Okay, I stand corrected.
Just my perspective, only perspective.
It's good.
Just my
perspective. Good. Well, I can't believe the time flew by already, but of course, our podcast is called HOA, It's a True Story. You shared one story with us. Do you have another one you could share?
I have probably more stories than we have time, but I'll encapsulate one that's memorable and one that I think Kelly heard me share at this industry conference recently. I went on a hiking trip with my wife and in-laws to Yosemite National Park for the Christmas holiday. And I thought that I knew exactly where we're going and told people, follow me, I've got this. And come to find out, when my wife asked me if we had missed a turn she thought we just were supposed to take, I told her, no, of course not. I've got this. I know exactly where we're going. Trust me. And I found out a mile later that I had led her and my in-laws in the wrong direction in the freezing cold for a mile. And so I had to very sheepishly turn and admit to them that I had just taken the wrong route. And what was interesting, she said this really key comment in terms of feedback. And it became a mentorship moment for me from my spouse. And she said, Ted, first of all, if you would have listened to us, we wouldn't have ended up here. But she said, the problem is that you're so convinced that you're right sometimes that you don't make the space to be wrong. Hmm. And that really hit me, because I thought about how often have I, both in leadership and in life, been so convinced that I was right, I knew the right way, and so confident that I didn't give myself the space to be wrong. So that really taught me the importance of being open to feedback, soliciting feedback from others around me, both, you know, those that I lead and those that have led me in the past. and to realize that I don't always have all the answers.
Well, I could see why you're a very popular speaker. So
I love that you got a mentorship moment from your spouse.
Yeah.
My spouse would like me to recognize his feedback as mentorship moments more often.
I'm still reminded, Kelly, of that experience on a regular basis. Anytime my wife comes to my keynote, she said, I remember that. I'm glad that you do too.
I just want to give a plug for Ted's book because I got it after I saw him speak, and his book about what leaders, great leaders do differently, 52 tips to improve your leadership, is amazing. So if you want to hear more from Ted as a reader, I will avidly endorse said book. You can get it on Amazon. It's like very bite-sized. I need small bits of like inspiration every now and then, and I go back to that book constantly to like read a tip or look at something, and it's very micro learning and easy to digest and get through.
Can you say the title again, Kelly?
Called What Great Leaders Do Differently, 52 Tips to Improve Your Leadership.
And is that on Amazon, Ted?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. I may gift that for Christmas to a few people.
It's short, small, like it's a great book.
Well, do either you or Bill want to share a mentorship moment?
I have a funny one, though. It's not really so much of a mentorship, but it is a little bit. So working with some people on their communication skills and stuff, and we have some of these jobs that we do destructive testing on. So we're dealing with multiple homeowners and tearing apart their houses and communicating all the different things. And I had to laugh because I had the, I mean, sure, they were millennials. They might've been younger than that, saying, we can't get a hold of this owner. He was here. He's gone. And I said, well, how have you tried to contact him? Well, we've called him like 3 times and emailed him. I said, he's like a digital guy. You didn't text him? You got to be kidding me. And right. It's like the baby boomer comes to the rescue. They text him. He responds back in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I had my mentor and I was working on a project, this big project, and I had to give reports to executives. And I was so concerned about getting all the information in this one email and getting it out. And, you know, so I printed it out for him to read and kind of edit and give me some feedback. And he's like, look, this is a lot of great information, but I got lost after the first paragraph. I don't have time to read this, nor are any of the executives going to have time to read this. So you have to condense this down to 5 bullets. I was like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to do that, but it taught me the value of being concise and clear when I'm trying to write information and really looking at my audience who I'm presenting to and trying to give information to. But it was definitely a big learning moment that came out of that for me. And I've since shared that feedback and given it to others that I've mentored as they've, you know, they're trying to present information and share information.
A really good point. They get lost after a paragraph, especially in emails. So
my mentor, one of them, probably the one that I remember the most, we remained friends for a very long time. And she was one of my college professors. And she's actually been on the podcast as a speaker and a guest. She wrote several books on how to stay playful and be a leader and keeping play in your life. So it was really nice that I got to do that and bring her onto the podcast, one of the earlier episodes. And we still stay in touch. It's really nice to know that they're still there. And I hope that the people that I've mentored as my career has waned now, that they'll continue to reach out to me as well. It'd be a good circle. Well, thank you again, Ted. It's been so insightful. I know this is going to be a really good episode. It's going to get a lot of traction. And if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, is it best to go through your website?
Yeah, website or social media. So realtedmott.com is the site. Pretty active on LinkedIn, as well as Instagram and Facebook. But I'd like to make one final comment, Regan, if I may.
Sure.
I want to say thank you to all of your listeners in the community management industry. I've had the privilege of meeting so many people in your profession at different conferences, and I know that the work you do is frequently thankless, and people always come to you with problems and issues and board drama and, you know, emergency middle of the night things that need to be resolved, and they don't often appreciate all the chaos that you have to deal with, all the personalities you have to manage, and the hours that you put in and time you take away for your family. So I just want to thank all of your listeners for the work that you all are doing, the good that you're doing in the world, because for people like me that are homeowners in an HOA, now in Colorado, come from an HOA community in California, it helps to create some sense of normalcy and some sense of sanity amidst these communities we live in. So thank you.
Oh, that's fantastic. They don't get told thank you enough. So I appreciate you for doing that. Well, if anybody would like to reach out to Ted or maybe have him as a speaker at one of their company events, you can find him on all of those social media sites that he mentioned. And of course, you can always reach us at inquiry@gbgroupinc.com and we'll pass it along to Ted and get in touch with him for you. Thanks again, Ted. It was really nice having you on the show. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. Thank you.